Gods were many and their qualities and attributes many and always were the creatures of the men who were supposed to have a knowledge of and acquaintance with these gods, and who were looked upon by the common people as entitled to their credulity and obedience in attempting to carry out the wishes and directions of these gods. You probably have heard of such people and of such gods, and I will not consume space to detail more of the moral conditions of the men of those days or of their utter want of knowledge of the true God and the wholly insufficient thing their conscience was. Well, of course, we died as all men will have to die, and when we found ourselves spirits, more of us were in the dark plains and the many in the hells, the Paget Messages 1918, of which latter class I was one, and the hells then and cause thereof, were the same as they are today and the difficulties of becoming relieved therefrom, the same as are the difficulties of today. I remained in the hells a very long time, and simply for the reason that my state or other conscience, continued without change, and right and wrong as I had perceived it on earth, persisted with me, and my conscience refused to understand that change is the law of the hells as well as of the earth and the heavens, and that stagnation is itself a sin against law. Many of us who had been associates on earth became associates in the hells and continued in our same ideas of what morality meant, and when I say morality, I simply mean that right course of living and thinking which is in harmony with the creation of the perfect man, as I am now. Of course I could not have given this explanation of morality when I was in the hells, but nevertheless, it applies, even though I did not understand its meaning. I don't seem to be able to write further now and must stop, but it will come again. Let me say that you are very much in the dark as to what the truths of the spirit world are, and need enlightenment, and I can enlighten you. Love is not in my curriculum. All I know of or care about is knowledge and truth. And of these things would I write. Knowledge is the comprehension of that which has reality of existence and not a speculative existence only, and this is the knowledge that I have and can teach you. Well, shall I tell you some of the truths of the spirit world? The greatest truth is that the soul of man is immortal and needs no recreation, and the next is like unto it, that this soul is as distinct from all other souls as one star is different from any other. Well, I know this, because I can see the souls of men and of spirits, and know that they are separate and never become absorbed, the one in the other, and the soul is immortal because I have met souls here who have lived for thousands of years without having seen the death of a soul, or heard of such death, and it is reasonable, yet certain, to infer that as death has never appeared during such centuries of time, death never will appear. I am a philosopher here, as I was on earth, and am still pursuing my studies on existence, with much increased facilities and satisfaction, and am in a sphere where the frailties of my earth life have left me. I am pure spirit inwardly, though I have a body that is of the sublimated material and subject 662, to change, but never to destruction, and is the portrayer of my soul, the I am. Well, I had a certain line of thought that I desired to reveal to you in a methodical way, and your questions somewhat interfered with the symmetry of my discourse, but I do not complain as I have explained to you certain primal facts or truths, which may be of benefit to you. I would like, though, to deliver to you in this way my thoughts of truth in a logical and consecutive manner, and if convenient to you, will come again and do so. No. There is nothing in my lecture on love that I can enjoy without seeking to learn of its nature or truth, and it is not so important to discourse about as other things that you will find expounded in my lecture. A spirit says I must stop. Good night, Longiticus. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well, dear, you have had two spirits write you tonight that are not of our banner, as you may know. They are wise men, though, and what they could say to you might be instructive and desirable to know, but I saw that you were not satisfied with having them write, and they perceived the fact also, and left. I know that you are disappointed, because some of the higher spirits did not write, but they could not make the necessary rapport and so did not attempt to write. You were not just in the condition. I would like to write my letter, but you are too much drawn on now to undertake the writing. I want you to permit me to commence early when you are fresh. If you will try to get in condition by tomorrow night, I will certainly come and write. Well, that will be satisfactory. I do not think it best to write more tonight. Baby is here and sends her love. Love us both and pray to the Father. Good night and God bless you. Your own true and loving, Helen. November 26, 1918. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. After I passed over, I saw that I must seek a way to communicate with you in my spirit existence, and you may not know, but it is a fact that I was with you when you visited the mediums who informed you that you were a medium, being possessed of the gift of automatic writing, and I, having learned this fact from some of your spirit relatives, and the Paget messages 1918, principally your father, impressed these mediums to tell you of the fact of your mediumship. And when, at last, you made the experiment, I was present with you and exerted all my powers, and had the help of other spirits, in making your experiment a success. And when you commenced to receive the messages, I cannot tell you how happy I was and thankful that the way was opened up that enabled me to tell you what, above everything else, I was so anxious to tell you. And if you will think for a moment of the nature of my communications, you will remember that the burden of all my messages was my love for you, and no matter how important other portions of the messages might be, yet in them was the continuous assurance that I loved you with all my heart and soul. There are various kinds of love existing between humans and also between spirits and humans, each having its source in different conditions of fact and in varying causes, and of all these loves, only one is or can be the true and eternal one. The love of husband and wife is a beautiful thing, and may exist during the life on earth and bring much happiness to its possessors, even though that love is temporary, and, in the workings of the law of attraction in the spirit life, may entirely cease its existence and become forgotten. And so, I may state, will be the destiny of the paternal and maternal, and brotherly and sisterly love. All these are based upon causes or conditions that are merely temporary, that is, may last during time and for a more or less longer period in eternity, but finally must end. These loves, as I understand, are provisions of God which are necessary to enable mankind to work out their progress through the human life in the way that will produce the greatest harmony and happiness among mortals as they contend with the difficulties, cares and disappointments of the earth life. In the spirit world there is no need for these loves, for a greater bond of affection is provided, and is created or brought into operation by the great law of attraction, which causes the merely personal relationship that may have existed between spirits when inhabiting the earthly forms, to cease to be forgotten. This law of attraction is based upon the condition of the soul, whether that soul possesses the development created by the divine love or only the created by the purification of the natural love. In the early stages in the spirit life, the conditions of the earth life may remain for a time, because the spirit's state of soul and desires in 663, affections may continue to be as they were when on earth, but as stagnation is not a quality of the soul in spirit life. These things which may have bound the humans together in the relationship mentioned do not long continue as they were, as there is no way of avoiding the workings of this law and its results. In order for this state to continue any great length of time, it would be necessary that all the spirits bound by these affections or conditions should remain without change in their souls, and that rarely happens, for in our world the individual becomes the individual in fact, and the real is apparent and spirits see one another face to face, and pretense or effort to hide the true condition of love or affection, or want of the same, becomes futile, so that, as is the real state of the spirit, so is his relationship to other spirits. Again, this law of attraction operates in other directions than that of determining the mere affections, for men's mental conditions and aspirations are determining factors in establishing relationships among themselves. When men become spirits, they are at the time of transition, and for a longer or shorter period afterwards, the possessors of the same knowledge and aspirations as they were immediately preceding their passage, with this difference, that to a more or less extent this knowledge and these aspirations, when in spirit life, are made apparent to others, not necessarily in words and professions, but by the power of seeing, which all but the very depraved spirits possess, so that, pretense and dissembling being absent or of no avail, these spirits, under the law, attract those affections arising from their human relationships cease to bind these several spirits, and they obey the law. The temporary love has fulfilled its mission and object, and to continue to exist under the circumstances mentioned would work injury and retardation to the progress of these spirits, no matter what may be the nature or cause of that progress. Now, while what I have said is all true, yet there is another provision of the Father's law, designed for the happiness of men while mortals, that causes the love arising from the human relationship to continue with the spirit so long as the object of that love continues in the flesh, and no matter what the progress of that spirit may be or what its attractions are, yet it continues to love the mortal during his earthly career, and to watch over and help him, and all this even though this love which once existed for other mortals in the same relationship, and who have passed to spirit, the Paget Messages 1918, life, may have ended and been forgotten. This human love is subject to change and death, and those of earth life who console themselves with the thought that when they pass to spirit life they will meet their loved ones who have gone before, never to part again, will be disappointed, but not long distressed, for they will soon thereafter learn and experience the workings of the great law of attraction, and in that experience will be happy. But there is another and differing love, not of the temporal, but of the everlasting, in its nature, and all humans have it, though probably unaware of the fact, but which at some period, and this may be for some time, in eternity they will become conscious of, and then never deprived of, for it is the perfect fulfillment of this law of attraction. I mean the soulmate love, of which I have written you so often. It was born before any man appeared in the flesh, and was a part of his very soul's creation, and of which he could never be deprived, though so often does it lie dormant in the souls and consciousness of man. I and others have written you as to how when the souls of men were created by the Father these souls were made male and female, though constituting only the one soul, two in one, the perfect one. And with their creation was bestowed upon them a love, not two loves, but only one which was possessed equally by each part of the complete soul, and which will always remain one in its complete workings, although these two parts of the soul have to be, and are, separated in their incarnation in the human body, which incarnation is for the purpose of giving the male and the female parts of the one soul a separate individuality, without severing or disuniting this love, which through all eternity binds together these two parts as one. The love of which I have first spoken is the love for time only, the soulmate love is the love for all eternity, and this great love which requires that at some stage in eternity these two parts of the one soul shall become one again, should be one of the most convincing proofs that all men, sooner or later, will come into harmony with the will of the Father and with the laws creating such souls. The fundamental law of the universe is that all things shall come into harmony with the will of the Father, and as the hells and all that they contain are out of such harmony, men may believe that in the ultimate working out of this law no soul will remain in the hells or in the condition or state of existence that primarily makes the hells, but that all souls in their perfected union will become 664, inhabitants of either the spiritual or the celestial heavens. And further, I must say, as you have been told before, that this soulmate love is the only love that can have a separate and individual existence in the celestial heavens, where the divine love exists to the exclusion of every other love save the soulmate love, and the more the spirits, the united two in one, possess the divine love, the greater will be their possession of this soulmate love. As you know, I am your soulmate and come to you so often in my love and you realize the fact and respond, and at times are very happy. You have experienced on several occasions the depth and yearnings of my love to such an extent that your soul has come to me in my spirit world and enjoyed moments of unspeakable bliss, and as you may not know, left me with protestations against its return to your mortal body, and, if my love had not been wise as well as intense and wonderfully absorbing, your protests would have been heeded and you would have remained with me to enjoy the happiness which can be yours only when you come to the spirit world to find your home everlasting. It has been said that the man in love is a fool, and that may be true in regard to the merely human love, but as to this soulmate love the more of it we possess the wiser we become and correspondingly happy. I cannot tell you the depth and height and wonders of my love, and only say that it fulfills to the uttermost the great law of attraction, and there is nothing, save the divine love, in all the universe of being that can excel it or take its place, or make two souls so united that even death cannot sever it. I will be with you as long as you continue to live on earth, in all the fullness of my love, and when the time of your passing comes, I will be present, and so much love will be around you that you will forget the dying and the awakening, and know only that your soulmate is with you, telling you of love and happiness and the beauties of the life that will be yours, and showing you to a large degree how splendid and heavenly this love can make a spirit that possesses the divine love also. Well, dear, baby is here and says she has read what I have written and is so glad that you have me for your soulmate. She is very happy and is growing all the time in beauty and in the possession of the Father's love, and so wants you to seek more and more for this love, and says, how rich Daddy is to have the soulmate love of my beautiful mother and the certainty of the great, the Paget messages 1918, love of the Father, if he will only seek for it, and in addition, which may not count for much, he has the love of his own baby, who is now so happy. And Mary says that I must not neglect to say that she is here also, and has read my message with great pleasure, and wants me to tell the doctor that if he will only substitute himself in your place and her in my place and read the letter, he will know something of her love for him, that he is her soulmate and can never be another's, and she is with him so very often, trying to impress him with her presence and love. Well, dear, you have written a great deal and I will stop. I am so glad that I could write. Good night, my dear Ned. Your own true and loving, Helen. November 29, 1918. Let me write a few lines, for I am very anxious to write you in reference to a truth which obtains in our spirit world, and with which you may not be acquainted. As you may not know, there is in our world a law which makes the soul of one who has not yet been purified suffer the penalties for the acts of sin and evil of which he may have been guilty during his earth life. And there is no forgiveness of these acts in the sense that forgiveness is taught by the theologians and churches. But the only forgiveness is the cessation of recollection of these acts, so that they become as though they had never been, and, as the soul becomes naturally pure and in harmony with the laws of its creation, it then comes into its natural condition, and then only, forgiveness takes place. God does not forgive by the mere act of pronouncing forgiveness or by any arbitrary and sudden blotting exit of sins, and thereby removing the condition which creates the inharmony, and so you will understand, that he cannot forgive sin in this way, neither can the popes, priests, teachers or churches, and the pronouncing of forgiveness by these men constitutes a deception of and an injury to the persons who pray and ask for forgiveness. And for such deception these men will have to answer when they come to the spirit world and realize the truth of forgiveness and the great deception that they had practiced upon those who were their followers and believers in these false doctrines. Many spirits are now living and suffering in darkness in their purgatories just because of their beliefs, and the results thereof, in these misleading teachings. 665. There is no forgiveness until man makes the effort by struggling and succeeding in getting rid of these recollections, and such riddance can be obtained only by men realizing the fact that sin is only the effect of their having done those things, and thought those thoughts which are out of harmony with the will of God and the laws governing the creation of man. There can be no sinning of the physical body or of the spirit body, but only of the soul, caused by the exercise of the will in a manner antagonistic to the will of the Father. The body, of course, is affected by these inharmonious thoughts and impelling directions of the will, and is caused thereby to commit the act which is the external demonstrator of the inharmonious exercise of the will, and as God leaves to man the freedom of exercising his will, as such will may be influenced by the thoughts, desires and affections of his appetites and lusts. So God leaves to man the application of the remedies that will free the soul from such influence and effects as are caused by this exercise of the will, and only when these thoughts and appetites and lusts become eliminated from his soul and desires, does the soul come into its natural condition and in harmony with the will of God. Man, himself, must be the actor and the initiating force to bring about these changes in his will, and no assurances of forgiveness by popes, priests or churches can eradicate these contaminating influences, or remove that which is the cause of the sin or the effect of the cause. You must see that there can be no relationship between the assurance of forgiveness and the sin nor the cause thereof. Prayer to the Father for forgiveness or supplication to priests and church is supposed to effectuate the objects sought, but this belief is erroneous and does not bring the relief prayed for. Yet prayer is a very important element in forgiveness, and while the Father does not, and the priests and church cannot, forgive sin in the manner mentioned, yet true, sincere prayer to the Father for forgiveness will bring its answer, and effect, not the sin, but the soul and state of man, so that their will and appetites and desires may be influenced in such a way that they will receive and realize the fact of a wonderful help in changing these appetites and desires, and in turning their thoughts to those things that will enable them to remove from their recollections the acts and thoughts, which are the causes of the existence of their souls in a state of sin. The Paget Messages 19:18, if men would only realize these truths, and, when they desire the forgiveness of their sins, pray to the Father for help in turning away from these thoughts and in exercising their will in accord with His will and not expect any arbitrary forgiveness or removal of their sins, they would find themselves on the way to this forgetfulness and the true forgiveness. Well, I desired to write this short message and am pleased that I could do so. Thanking you, I will say, good night. Your brother in Christ, Peter. Apostle of Jesus, December 1, 1918. I am here, Francis Bacon. Let me write a short message in reference to our spirit world and one of the laws that obtain therein. You were told a few nights ago that which is material in itself, always remains material although the combination into forms and appearances may change, and even the material elements may cease to be perceptive to the faculties or senses of the human, and this assertion of fact is true and without exception. The material of the universe is one and not diverse, and the thing that you may sense as being material is a part of the same great universal material of existence, and may at different times and under certain conditions become incorporated in the invisible material and yet remain just as real as when it was the thing that you could sense as a reality. The fact of the existence of the material is not determined by the requirement that men shall be able to cognize its existence by the exercise of someone or all of the perceptions of the human organs used to comprehend what they call the material of nature. And whether or not men are able to so cognize what is the truly material does not affect the existence of the material, for as it now has reality so it would have if men had no perception at all. To the blind man, the knowledge of the existence of that part of the material of what you may call the natural world that depends on sight for its comprehension, can be acquired only by information from those who have that sight, and so, knowledge of the existence of the material in a world not subject to comprehension by the senses of men can only be obtained through information given them by those who have cognition such existence by reason of faculties that they possess. Men sometimes claim that they have knowledge of the existence of the material in the invisible world as a resultant from the exercise of reason and an acquaintance with the law of cause and effect, and in many instances this claim is true, especially where effects are perceived, which must have had causes existing beyond the circle of the known material. To illustrate, men see and understand the effects of the workings of electricity, and to an extent can control and utilize that electricity, and yet they cannot by the exercise of their natural senses claim knowledge of the fact that it exists as a part of the material of the universe. They know it only as a cause producing an effect, and as to whether it is of the material or not they have no sensate knowledge. Electricity is of the material and intangible and not subject to the perception of sense, and to men has an existence only because it is accepted and declared to be the cause of certain known effects. Now, there are many material things in the invisible world that have never come to the knowledge of men by reason of effects produced and made known to their cognition, yet these things are just as real and just as much a part of the material of the universe as are those things that men call the material of the natural world. Now what I have written is merely to demonstrate the fact that the existence of the material is not confined to what men call the natural world, and that men's knowledge does not always determine whether the material exists or not. The material has its place and existence in all the spheres of the spirit world and is used by spirits in their work and living just as really as it exists in the natural world and is used by men for their welfare and happiness. And when the inhabitants of the spirit world use it for the purpose and in such a manner as to make the invisible material perceptible to the senses of men, they should not look upon such phenomena as unreal or non-acceptable, because such phenomena is not produced in accord or harmony with the laws of the material as they understand them. I will continue later. Your friend, Francis Bacon. I am here, Helen. Well, dear, the message that you have just received was from the spirit who wrote you a few nights ago on the subject of the material. He seemed to be much interested in the matter and says he desires to impart information 666, the Paget Messages 1918, which is scientific and of importance to mankind, and that he will come again soon. I see that you have had a very happy day and feel much better because of your visit, and you are better, and in such condition that the other spirits can write, and I hope that tomorrow night you will give them the opportunity. You will receive some very instructive and vital messages and should give all the time possible to the preparation for receiving these truths. I am quite happy in being with you today, and have felt that we are getting closer together in our love and rapport. It is late, and I will not write more now. Baby is here in her love and says she hopes that she may soon be able to write her letter, and that she loves you so much. Well, he is ready, and will write tomorrow night, if you will prepare the way. I will tell him. Love us and pray to the Father, as we want you to get more of the love and come closer to us in your soul development. Good night, your own true and loving, Helen. December 16, 1918. Let me write a few lines tonight as I desire to tell you of a truth that to me seems important for mankind to know in order that they may comprehend the truth of their personal salvation. I am a spirit of soul development and an inhabitant of the celestial heavens, where only those whose souls have been transformed by the divine love into the very nature and essence of the Father can find a habitation. I will not write at any great length and have only one idea or truth to convey, and that is that no man or spirit can possibly receive the full salvation that Jesus taught and exemplified in his own person, who does not become wholly possessed in his soul of this divine love of the Father, and becomes rid of the conditions and attributes that belong to his created soul. This soul was not created with any of the divine attributes or qualities, but simply and merely with those which you may call human and which all men and spirits who have not experienced the transformation possess. The God-man, as Jesus is sometimes designated by your religious writers and theologians, was not at the time of his creation or appearance in the flesh possessed of these divine attributes, which are of the nature and essence of the Father, but only of the human attributes which belong to the perfect man, that is, the man who was the perfect creature as he existed before the fall of the first parents, when sin had not entered 667, into their souls, and into the world of men's existence. Jesus was from the time of his birth, the perfect man, and, consequently, without sin, all his moral qualities being in complete harmony with the will of God and the laws controlling his creation, yet, he was not greater than were the first parents prior to their act of disobedience. There was nothing of God, in the sense of the divine that entered into his nature or constituents, and, if the divine love had not come into and transformed his soul, he would have remained only the perfect creature of a quality no higher or greater than was bestowed upon the first man, and Jesus was as regards his possibilities and privileges, like this first man prior to his fall or death of the potentiality of becoming divine, but differed from him in this, that Jesus embraced and made his own these privileges and hence became divine, while the first man refused to embrace them and lost them, and remained the mere man though not the perfect man as he was created. And while Jesus by reason of his possession of the divine love became divine, yet he never became the God-man, and never can, for there does not exist and never can be a God-man. God is God, alone, and never has and never can become man, and Jesus is man only and never can become God. But Jesus is preeminently the divine man, and may rightly be called the best beloved Son of the Father, for he possesses more of the divine love and, consequently, more of the essence and nature of the Father, than does any other spirit of the celestial heavens, and with this possession there comes to him greater power and glory and knowledge. He may be described and understood as possessing and manifesting the wisdom of the Father, and we spirits of the celestial kingdom recognize and acknowledge that superior wisdom of Jesus and are compelled by the very greatness and force of the wisdom, itself, to honor and abide in his authority. And this transcendent and greatest possessor of the Father's wisdom is the same when he comes to you and reveals the truths of God as he is when in the highest spheres of the celestial kingdom clothed in all the glory of his nearness to the Father.